Unknown Assailant, the last of the Gorse trilogy, dramatised for radio by Alan Pryor, from the novel by Patrick Hamilton.
They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing.
With Robert Glenister as Ralph Gorse, Alison Pettit as Ivy Barton, and Stephen Thorne as the narrator and Archibald Kane.
They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing.
The year is 1933.
You're a stranger to these parts, aren't you?
Yes, I rather am.
And a bit posh?
Well, I don't work on a farm, if that's what you mean.
Oh, what do you do for a living?
I'm a commercial traveller, actually.
Oh, you don't look one. Usually they're in dark suits and bowler hats.
Oh, I'm in mufti for the weekend.
Oh, you're lucky to be in any job these days. Farming's terrible. They say it'll book up again next year. Well, what do you sell, anyway?
Oh, business stationery, letterheads, envelopes, that sort of thing.
Oh, there's not much call for that round here.
No, I'm passing through. I stopped when I saw this pub. I rather fancied a drink.
Oh, yeah, the beer's good here. In the barrel. But you're drinking whiskey.
Oh, I only drink beer when I'm thirsty.
Well, go on. Try the beer.
No, thank you. You have another?
Oh, no, I'm due home.
Where's home?
Down the road, 2 miles.
Well, I must drink up.
Oh.
Better be going myself. I say, can I give you a lift?
Oh, well,
go on. I'm harmless.
I've heard that story before.
I've got my car outside.
Well, I hope you've got lights. It's dark in the country.
I hope so.
Not so fast! Slow down!
All right. There. Where are we?
You nearly killed us.
Oh, hardly. We're in a lane.
A cart track.
Do you know it?
I certainly do, like the back of my hand.
I find you rather attractive.
Oh, I had an idea that you did.
I'll kiss you if you look at me like that.
Well, go on then. I've never been kissed by your sort before.
Yes, I am somewhat different.
Oh, show me the difference, won't you?
If you get out of the car, I will.
Oh, I don't like that idea.
There's no room in the car for what I'm proposing to do.
Who do you think I am?
Oh, little Miss Bold, I'd say.
Well, I'm only walking.
I could do with a breath of fresh air.
Well, so long as it's only fresh air you're after. You're a bit odd, aren't you?
How so?
You take a girl out for a country walk and you don't do nothing.
No? Let's sit down on that stile.
Oh. That's more like it.
There. That's comfortable. Isn't it? How's that?
Better.
You're so sweet smelling.
Like a farmyard, you mean?
I want to try a little experiment.
Oh.
Do you mind?
Well, I'd try anything once.
Give me a scarf.
Why?
Only in play. Only in play. Then, your wrists tied to here with my necktie.
What are you doing?
Making an experience for you.
Oh, you're one of those perverts we read about in the Sunday papers, aren't you?
Yes, that's exactly what I am.
Well, I've never been tied up before. Doing it. I've heard about such things. I've never done it.
Well, it's the first time for everything.
Well, you're not going to hurt me, are you?
No. I'm going to rob you. Where's your handbag?
You're serious, aren't you?
Oh, very serious we are.
It's £2.12. All I've got. Take it and go.
Oh, I intend to.
Just go. Leave me alone.
Ralph Gorse, the stranger's real name, had an unusual attitude to women, with an outstanding ability to trade on their weaknesses, and those of some men come to that. There had once been the lovely but gullible Esther Downes of Brighton and the West Pier, then the widowed lady of Reading, Joan Plumley Bruce, and of course the Haywards Heath dentist, and the Rugby watchmaker. A sexual adventurer and resolute social climber, Gorse was a highly skilled fraudster, a ruthless con man working on the inherent snobbery of the British class system. A malicious genius, perhaps, a spider in the corner luring the insect life of saloon bar suburbia into his web. Now comes the salutary tale of Ivy Barton, the open-hearted young barmaid who Gorse thought must be one of the silliest women in the world, and certainly quite the silliest he had personally known.
Good evening, sir. What will you have?
A large whiskey, please.
A large whiskey. Any particular brand?
No, just cooking.
Never heard it called that before.
Special programme at the BBC. Here is the news.
Thank you.
An unknown assailant has attacked Betty Blakely.
I say, would you...
female farm worker.
Do you mind turning the wireless on?
Oh, of course, sir.
He apparently tied her up and robbed her. She was unhurt, but suffering from shock. The unknown assailant was a man aged about 35, tall and with a good accent. He was wearing a brown sports jacket and grey flannels. He is believed to be dangerous.
Serve her right.
What?
Girl nearly murdered. Serves her right. Going into a field with a man she didn't know.
Yes, you're right. She was foolish. Some men aren't what they seem. Such men are dangerous. And clever, too. They have to be to escape detection.
You sound as if you're familiar with such things, sir.
Well, I've read about it, that's all. Like the ordinary reader. Will you have a drink?
Oh, I'll have a half of mild and bitter, sir.
I always like young women who drink beer. They are special, defying convention and all that sort of thing. Met one recently.
And was she nice?
No, not especially nice, since you ask. Although I think she thought that I was, as some people think... that I was a sort of fool.
You don't strike me that way, sir.
What sort of person do you think I am?
I think you're as smart-looking a gent as I've seen this month. And I see a lot of men in this job.
Well, that's awfully kind of you. What's your name, by the way?
Ivy Barton.
And what part of the country do you come from, Ivy? You're not a Londoner.
Oh, excuse me, sir. Yes, madam? Gin and it, please. Gin and it... That'll be 1 and 6, madam. Here you are. Thank you. Norfolk, that's where we came from. Near Diss. After Mum died, my father, wanted to get away, so he retired and came to live in Fulham.
Oh, it must be quite a change for you. From the country, an innocent girl, exposed to the den of vice, London.
I've seen no dens of vice. No. London suits me. There's a bit of life here. As for the West End, there's all those theatres and music halls.
Well, you like the theatre?
Go every chance I get. In the gods, mind you.
Actually, I'm connected with the theatre, in a way.
You're an actor, are you? We get them in here sometimes.
Oh, hardly. I'm connected to the theatre in, let us say, a business way. A financial way, actually.
Wow. You must be a very clever gentleman.
Oh, yes, I'm that, all right. Well, I must be on my way. Well, it's nice to talk to you, Ivy.
Very nice to talk to you, sir. Good evening to you.
I'll be in again. Good evening.
Claridge, pleased to meet you. I had your letter introducing yourself on Savile Club paper. Are you a member? Well, silly question.
Well, I always stay at my club when I'm in town. I caught the eye of H.G. Wells there the other day.
What do you drink?
It's on me. Barman, 2 large scotches, if you please.
Thank you, sir. Awfully decent of you. Have you seen the show?
It's not getting the houses it deserves.
Well, what can I do for you, Mr. Claridge?
As you will have read in my note, Lord Lydon, I'm interested in investing in plays. I've been taking a note of your productions, and I've liked what I've seen.
Jolly nice of you to say so. By the way, I don't use the title for business. Tommy will do splendidly.
I'm Gerald. Well, Tommy, I am not alone in this little school of investors. Rather, you could say that I am an advisor to gentlemen of means who will put money into productions if I recommend them. That sort of thing.
I've nothing against agents, you know.
Well, I'm not strictly speaking an agent. I don't want any commission from you, should my clients invest. Anything my clients make, I charge them commission on.
Ah, jolly good. I like that. That's very fair. Cheerio.
Cheerio.
When can I meet these clients? These are hard times for musicals in the West End. Bloody critics don't know what they want. Had two shows close on me this season.
I'll find investors for you, Tommy. Rest assured on that.
I'd be very grateful. Where did you say you'd invested before?
Oh, here and there, Tommy. Here and there.
Good evening, sir.
The usual, Ivy.
One large scotch.
That's the ticket. And one for you.
Oh, I'll have my usual as well. Never thought I'd see you again, sir.
Oh, I keep turning up like the proverbial bare penny. As a matter of fact, I've become involved with some theatrical business in St. Martin's Lane.
Are you interested in a money way? You said something about that last time.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm nothing to do with the actors and singers and dancers. I'm strictly behind the scenes, you know.
But don't you meet them? The stars?
Oh, yes, of course. I know most of the cast on any show I'm financially interested in.
You're what they call a backer, aren't you, sir?
Gerald, please. Gerald Claridge.
Here's to your latest venture, sir, and here's your drink.
Good health to you, Ivy. Now, what's a good country girl like you doing here, by the way?
Oh, my father had relatives in Fulham, but he doesn't see much of them. He thinks they're after his money. Of course not, say I.
Money? I thought you said you were...
Well, my father, until he retired, was a head gamekeeper on the Lord Rivers estate in Norfolk. The head gamekeeper arranges the shoots for his lordship. The guests are pretty generous if they have a good shoot, and my pa always saw they had a good shoot.
You're a wise man.
I don't know about wise, although he's pretty close with his money. I don't get none of it, I can tell you. You know the old saying, every shilling a prisoner? That's my pa to a T.
Saving for the future. Jolly good idea.
Don't seem to do him much good, hoarding it. Best if he spent it and enjoyed himself, I say.
Yes, well, each to his own, I suppose. Does he interest himself in the theatre, like you?
No, not him.
And what are his interests?
Gardening, if he had a garden, which he don't. There's not a garden in the street, not for many a mile. He sits in the house and reads the paper. Sometimes he listens to the wireless.
Well, it sounds rather a lonely existence.
For me it is. I never get an hour away from work, but I have to do the cooking and cleaning in the house. Still, I'm better off than some.
Well, don't you get out and about, dancing and that sort of thing with your boyfriend?
I don't have no boyfriend. Men proposition barmaids, not go out with them.
Do they? Well, we'll have to do something about that, won't we?
Whatever do you mean, sir?
Miss?
Oh, excuse me. What would you like, sir?
A half a bitter, miss, if you please.
Oh, a half a bitter? There you are. That's threepence halfpenny to you.
Threepence and a halfpenny, dear.
Thank you, sir. Where were we?
We were discussing your going out for the evening. Or rather, you're not going out.
Well, that's true anyway.
Ivy, this is a little presumptuous of me, but...
He suggested that they should have tea at a well-known hotel at the top of Richmond Hill. She was bold enough to ask if they might not go to such a swell place, but to somewhere less exacting, a Lyons, ABC or Express restaurant in the town. They went to an Express. This had marble-topped tables and, without being crowded, an air of bustle and of middle-class and semi-proletarian reality, which, along with her tea, put a new life into Ivy.
Gerald?
Yes?
You were lost in thought.
I often am.
What are you thinking about now?
I am thinking about us.
Us? You and me?
Yes, us. You and I.
Oh, is that how you say it?
In polite circles, yes.
Well, what about you and I?
Well, what are we going to do about it?
Gerald,
I'm a barmaid, and you're a well-to-do young gentleman. I realise you like me, but I'm a good girl. Sorry.
I realise that. That's what attracts me to you.
It does?
Yes.
You don't want me in that way?
No, of course not.
Oh, I see.
Ivy, I want you in every way. But it's too early to talk of these things.
Well, that's out of the way then. I suppose I was only kidding myself.
No, not at all. My intentions are strictly honourable. To prove it, I'd like to meet your father.
Meet my dad? Whatever for?
Well, I don't like the idea of taking a man's daughter to places without declaring my intentions. I must put his fears at rest, as it were.
Oh, Dad doesn't know I'm here with you. I won't tell him if you don't.
Yeah, he'd worry. He's a good father, and he's entitled to see who his daughter meets and goes to cafeterias and the theatre with.
Theatre?
I have two tickets for a show next Monday night. Your night off, I think. It's called Reaching for the Moon, and it's on at the Royalty.
You're asking me out to the theatre?
Of course. In the orchestra stalls, definitely, not in the gods.
Oh, well, I don't really know what to say. You do mean it, don't you?
Ask your father if I can come round one night. I would so like to meet him. He sounds most interesting.
Well, he's met many gentlemen in his work.
Well, I'm sure. Well, say I pop in the Marlborough next Friday, and say I suggest afternoon tea on the same day. If he doesn't like the idea of meeting me, then no harm done.
What shall I wear to the theatre?
Well, a dress, I should suppose.
A new dress. An evening dress?
But it doesn't need to be all that fancy.
I don't look like that. I can afford a new dress. I have savings in the post office.
Savings? In the post office? Of course.
£60 I've got. I shall draw £4 out and spend it on a new evening dress.
£4?
I know it's a lot, but I love the theatre and I want to do you proud so that you're not ashamed of me.
I'm never going to be ashamed of you. Especially in that £4 dress.
You joke, but you just laugh at me, don't you?
No, I don't laugh at you. I take you very seriously, Ivy. And that £60 in the post office.
What? Oh, you're joking again. It might not be much to you, £60, but it's a lot of money to such as me.
Is this polite stranger a gentleman? Funny thing. I've never heard of a gentleman asking permission to take out a barmaid.
He's a proper gent. In fact, he's got Eton and Harrow written all over him.
How far's this little friendship gone, then?
Well, he certainly seems very interested in all my doings. As a matter of fact, he's asked if he can come round and see me here, at home.
Come round and see you here, alone? I'm not having that.
Oh, no, nothing like that. Come and see me with you. He says he'd like to meet you.
Did he now? What's the matter? You've got to be careful of these people, you know, what you meet in pubs. Why should he want to come here? It's not much of a place, is it? You don't think he's got a real fancy for you or anything like that, do you?
I don't know. He might have. Anyway, he looks and talks to me as though he does. I know when a man's interested.
And he really wants to come round here to see me.
Oh, yes. He's very keen about it.
What about you? Do you fancy him?
I don't know. He's so much above me. I don't allow myself to think like that.
What's the matter? I mean to say, you didn't tell him I had money, a bit put by, like. Mind you, you're 28.
You talk as if I'm past it.
You're not getting any younger, that's a fact.
I've not said anything about you. Why he's interested, I can't say. Chalk and cheese we are, him and me.
You should have a young man by now. You're not so bad-looking.
Thanks very much, I'm sure.
There's no harm in him coming round here if he wants to. In fact, I'd like to meet him, this mysterious Mr. Claridge. When does he want to come?
Well, we didn't fix a date. I was waiting to ask you. But he said it'd be at the Marlborough tomorrow night, and we can fix it then, I suppose.
You do that. Tell him he's very welcome, as far as I'm concerned. We might get you off my hands.
Well, Kane, old man, I can't report good news about your investment in Reaching for the Moon. Just keeping our heads above water, actually.
You need a star name. I believe in star names. Well, the public likes stars.
I know, but stars cost money.
Hello.
Good evening, Tommy.
Hello, Gerald. Sit down, have a drink. I've got a bottle open.
Thanks.
Meet Archie Kane. He's invested in the current show.
Gerald Claridge.
Of the firm?
Distantly.
Oh, how do you do, old chap?
How do you do?
Gerald's thinking of coming in, aren't you, Gerald?
Oh, yes. Yes, trouble is I'm not fixed up yet. But it will be a sizable sum, take it from me, if I do.
Gerald's invested in a good few shows.
Oh, what shows, may I ask?
May I say I don't play with my own money. I have a select list of clients, small investors, but solid. They add up.
Well, that sounds good business.
Well, of course, it cuts profits down. But it's never wrong to take a profit, is it?
Oh, never.
I say, Tommy, could I have two seats for tonight? I have a lady guest.
Ah, well, take a couple of stalls. Tell them at the box office I've said it's all right.
Thanks. See you after the show. Mr. Kane?
God knows, Archie, it's all wood out there.
It may pick up.
It had better, or I'll have to put the notices up.
500. Any good? Usual terms.
Any good? It's a lifesaver.
Yeah. Is that young man Claridge a good prospect?
Damned if I know, actually.
I say, Tommy Lydon said two front stalls, complimentaries. He's in the Circle Bar if you want to check. Name's Claridge.
It's fine, sir. Row F and seats, do you?
Fine.
There you are, sir.
Thanks very much.
Are we going backstage after the show?
Not tonight. Soon, though. I've got to get you settled in your seat and pick you up at the interval.
I'm going to see the show on my own.
Yes, awfully sorry. Bit of business cropped up. I'll be back to pick you up.
Oh, all right.
Nice dress. New dress. The £4 one, is it?
I wore it for you.
Yes, it's more correct to wear a dark dress in the evening.
Oh, it's wrong. I didn't know.
No, not at all. It looks lovely on you.
When will we go backstage?
Another night, soon. Go in. The show's started.
Oh, all right. I'll see you soon.
Yes, all right, darling.
This way, madam.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Hello again, Gerald. I thought you were seeing the show.
Well, I guided the lady friend to a seat. Thought I'd rather like a word about investing.
Ah, like it that much, do you?
It's a good show, but it needs a star.
Well, the public likes stars.
Hey, there. I told you, Tommy. The young man knows his theatre.
You said something about investing?
Well, I have a prospect in mind. Would you consider a few hundred?
I'd consider a 3-halfpenny stamp.
I thought of persuading one of my clients to come in.
I think I'll go and see a man about a dog.
Yes. Thank you, Archie. Well, Gerald, what is your proposal?
This particular client is impressed by titles. Your own, for instance.
I don't use it for business, you know.
I know that, old boy. But it would impress him, my client, if I could say I was a partner to Lord Lydon.
But you're not, Gerald.
No, I know I'm not. But it would perhaps be the difference between a happy outcome and a sad end. You see what I mean? It's an agreement between us, you and me. I don't want to lose this client, actually. It might prove the turning point. Other investors on my list might follow him.
Oh, really? Well, come back with a proposal. I'll consider it.
Good. We'll both make something out of it.
Well, as I say, I'll consider anything to keep this show running.
Splendid. Well, I must be off.
Oh, have a drink and tell me more.
Well, awfully kind of you, but no thanks. I must go. Cheerio.
Is Claridge gone?
Yes. Curious chap.
Yes, I agree.
But his money's as good as anybody else's, what?
Oh, right-o, on the nose. Hey, another glass?
Oh, I should say so. Your investment and another one from Claridge. We might be able to afford that star.
Ivy!
Did you enjoy the play?
Oh, yes, it was marvellous. I never sat so near to the front. I could see their makeup. It's a shame you missed so much of it.
Well, business before pleasure, darling Ivy. I'm going to put you in a taxi.
Taxi?
Well, I've got to go back in the theatre to clear a few things with Tommy. Lord Lydon.
Lord Lydon?
Yes, he's backing the show and producing it.
A lord?
Yes, a real lord. What's your address again?
11 Wynne Street, Fulham.
Well, take a taxi home and tell your father I'll call on him tomorrow for tea at 4 o'clock.
Why do you want to call for tea?
Remember, I want to talk to him about you.
Oh.
Taxi!
Where to, Governor?
Well, take the young lady to 11 Wynne Street, Fulham. Here's half a crown. Keep the change.
Oh, you're too kind, Governor.
What shall I tell Dad?
Well, tell him I'll call on him at 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Oh, good job, it's my afternoon off.
Get in, lady. You're holding everybody up.
Oh, good night, and thank you.
Tomorrow, then.
I'll get it.
On the dot.
Good afternoon, Ivy. I like to be on time.
Let me take your hat.
Thank you.
Come through, won't you? This is my father.
How do you do, sir? The Honourable Gerald Claridge, but I don't use it, actually.
How do, sir? Sit down in that chair, sir.
But isn't this your chair, sir? I'm sure this is yours.
Oh, this one's just as comfortable.
If you're sure.
You sit there. I'll sit here. But can't I give you something in the way of refreshment, sir? I'm afraid we ain't got very much interest in except what you see there on the sideboard.
And what do I see there? Well, at a superficial glance, it looks... My word, is it? Elderberry wine.
The very same. Mrs. Barton was a dab hand at a homemade wine. The wine's matured, see.
It's very nice if you don't mind a soft drink. With a kick to it.
Well, I can think of nothing nicer. Perhaps you'll pour it out with your own fair hands.
I don't know about fair. There have been water and slops too much, to be fair. I'll pour you a glass and Dad too.
Thank you. Well, this is a very nice little place you seem to have here, Mr. Barton. It's very nice indeed.
Well, that's very good of you to say so, sir. But certainly not what I'd like for myself. I had a large cottage on an old estate, but it went when my job went. This here's a tarted up workman's cottage. It's big enough, though, for my daughter and myself. I was used to my house and garden. I grew all sorts of vegetables, but that went with the job, too.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. To be paid off without a pension, having worked for your employer for years?
Oh, I wasn't paid off. I get a little pension and I have my savings. It don't cost much to live on the estate, and I, being careful, I have a bit put by. From what I earned with the gentleman's shoots and such like. I'm not a rich man, but not exactly a pauper neither, sir.
Well, I'm relieved to hear it, sir. Some of these landowners don't appreciate their workers, from what I've heard.
Not his lordship. Gave me this gold watch, engraved with my name. For good and long service, that reads. Fine words, sir.
Splendid words. You must have been proud to receive such a gift.
Indeed I was, sir. It was the talk of the village. Everybody knew me in the state and the county too. Not like her and Fulham. Nobody except the few people in the pub at the corner knows me, and I don't want to know them neither. Well, they're ignorant, sir, and that's all about it. Come to London, said my relatives. You'll be welcome here. And once, sir, they had a meet with me and nary a word since, and that was 3 years ago. I don't tell a lie.
I'm not surprised. You talking about the estate all the time and all the grand people you met. They put them off, it did.
I won't boast them, girl. I had met those gentlemen I mentioned. Everyone, lords and ladies, Mr. Clarence.
Oh, I'm sure, sir.
Another glass of wine. It won't make you tiddly. It's an old-fashioned country drink.
Mm. Thank you. And what could be better than something old-fashioned and from the country?
Hmm. Are you a country gentleman, then?
All his life, Ernest Ralph Gorse, in spite of his astonishing astuteness generally, was capable of absurd, seemingly totally inconsequent, blunders. In assuming the name of the Honourable Gerald Claridge, which he had only done in the last week or so, it had never even occurred to him to invent any sort of family to which this imaginary character belonged, or any background from which he had emerged. Therefore, at this moment, he had no idea whether he was a country gentleman or not. Gorse, however, when it caught up with him, was usually able to redeem this strange and incurable flaw in his mental make-up by quick thinking and audacity. He knew that at the moment he was talking to an ex-gamekeeper, therefore it would be fatal to pose as one with any knowledge of the country. And so he replied,
"No, sir. I'm afraid I'm very much of a town bird. Much too much, I sometimes think. No, I'm afraid clubs and theatres are more in my line than birds and trees."
"Well, yes, you know a lot about the theatre, don't you, Gerald?"
"Well, you have to if you're interested in it from a financial point of view, as I am."
"Well, have you got money in the theatre then, Mr. Claridge?"
"I have indeed, sir. In fact, I've got the greater part of my money tied up in it."
"And you find it a profitable business?"
"Well, I have so far, I must say. I have to admit, I have made great profits in shows. Of course, one must invest wisely, as you must know."
"I've never been backstage. I often wonder what it's like."
"What? You've never been behind the scenes?" "Well, we must remedy that. That is, if you're interested, of course."
"Oh, yes, I'm very interested."
"There you are. She's besotted."
"Believe me, you've both missed something, I can assure you. Not that there's really anything to it, but it ought to be done once in a lifetime."
"Gerald, could you get us in through the stage door sometime?"
"I certainly could. Though, personally, I usually prefer the pass door. You know what I mean? The pass door from the auditorium to the back."
"No, I've never heard of it."
"Well, then, you must let me introduce you to it. What about it?"
"And you too, Dad. Wouldn't you like to see?"
Mr. Barton spoke like a highly disinterested scientist, a Sir Francis Bacon, with all knowledge as his province. But in fact, he was anything but disinterested. Both his commercial and emotional instincts had been awakened. On the commercial side, he was delighted by the notion of getting something free, gratis and for nothing, and he also felt that such a visit to a theatre would help to cement an acquaintanceship with a most interesting and possibly affluent young man. On the emotional side, he was excited merely by the idea of being taken behind scenes. Mr. Barton was certainly not a boyish character on the whole, but Gorse's offer had succeeded in bringing into being a quite puerile enthusiasm.
"Well, I must say I'd like to know what goes on behind. I'd like to get behind the stage and see the workings."
"Well, we must arrange that sometime soon. All three of us, mustn't we?"
"You mean get to meet the actors and actresses?"
"Exactly, Ivy. And I think I will have some more of that excellent elderberry wine."
"Right. There."
"Oh, thank you."
"I'll go and get some sandwiches."
"Mr. Claridge, I'm pleased you've come to see me. That's a mark of a gentleman, if you don't mind me saying so. Ivy's a good girl, Mr. Claridge, and I don't think she'd let anybody down. But I don't want her let down, either."
"Mr. Barton, I will treat Ivy as I would my own sister."
"Well, sir, I won't have no one trifling with my girl."
"My intentions are absolutely honourable, sir. I know that some people could, and will, say that we are from two different classes. But I don't think that matters."
"I know she's fond of you, sir, but you're a gentleman, and she's only a young country girl, if you understand my meaning, sir."
"Well, it's early days yet, but I'll take your advice, sir, about anything that happens between Ivy and myself. That's why I came here to see you, to get your approval to meet her occasionally. If you say no, I will quite understand."
"That's what I like about you, Mr. Claridge. I've seen all sorts of my shooting parties, some of them good uns, some of them bad uns. But you, Mr. Claridge, you're a true gentleman."
"Thank you. Your health, sir."
"Your health too, Mr. Claridge."
"And we must arrange for you and your daughter to come, as my guests, on a theatrical tour to one production I'm interested in. I'll arrange the details with Ivy."
"You really mean going backstage while the show's on and all that?"
"That's exactly what I do mean, sir."
"Well, your health, Mr. Claridge."
"Hello, Tommy. How's biz? Waiter, bottle of champagne."
"Certainly, sir."
"Ah, jolly decent of you, old boy. Have you any good news for me?"
"Well, I have, rather. One of my clients has expressed an interest."
"Ah, who is he?"
"Oh, nobody you know. Rather an eccentric old countryman."
"Has he invested before?"
"No, he hasn't, and he's rather green. He'll need a bit of coaxing, certainly. But his money is as good as yours and mine."
"A small investor, then?"
"Yes, yeah, very small. A couple of £100, say."
"Oh, a couple of £100 is hard to find, especially for this show. A countryman, you say?"
"Yes. Well, I've got him here, actually."
"Here?" What, now?
Yes, to have a look around. And his daughter, rather a working-class sort of person. But one can't pick one's clients.
As you say, his money is as good as anybody's.
May I show them round? They're waiting outside the bar.
Oh, bring them in. I'll take them round myself.
Well, I don't know. They are very countrified.
I like ordinary people. Makes a change.
Yeah. Well, I'll not be a tick.
Radio.
Come in the bar, Mr. Barton. Come in, Ivy.
Right, sir.
Gerald, is that a rehearsal on stage?
Yes, it is.
Don't you do rehearsals first?
You do.
You do, dear young lady. But if a scene isn't going well and it needs polishing up, you do hold a special rehearsal for that piece. That's what we're doing now.
Lord Lydon, can I introduce Mr. Barton and his daughter, Ivy? Lord Lydon.
How do you do, my lord?
How do you do, Mr. Barton? And Ivy?
How do you do?
By the way, I don't use the title in theatrical business. I'm Tommy.
I'll call you Lord Lydon, my lord. I'm used to it.
Well, if you insist.
Oh, I do, sir.
I can see you're a countryman, after my own heart.
I hope so, sir.
A farmer, I take it? Whereabouts do you farm?
I'm retired now, my lord.
I'll take the party on a guided tour, Tommy.
No, you won't. I will. Let me take your arm, dear lady, and let me explain what's happening as I go along.
Do we meet the actors?
Of course you do. Come along. These are the flats, my dear. The flats are the scenery, boards propped up to make the walls of the room or whatever. The footlights there are called floats. They light the stage from the ground level. The battens there light the backcloth with spotlights if needed. This is the lighting switchboard in what we call the prompt corner, where the prompter sits and whispers if actors forget their lines. The switchboard is on that platform and is operated by a member of stage management. He's in charge of the whole lighting plot. Ah, those are the flies, worked by the flymen who operate the grid. With those long ropes, they lower the backcloths to change the scenes.
Oh, I've never been so excited. Thank you, my lord.
Oh, Tommy, please.
Mr. Tommy, then.
Now, come and meet the actors. People, I want you to meet a couple of friends of mine. Mr. Barton and Ivy, his daughter. They're from the country. This is the leading lady, Madge Morrison. And this is the leading man, Stanley Spicer.
Nice to meet you, Miss Barton.
Pleasure, I'm sure.
Have you seen the show yet?
I have, but my father hasn't.
Oh, Mr. Barton, you absolutely must come in.
We will, won't we, Father?
Oh, you must. Tell all your friends.
Oh, I don't think my friends...
Oh, it's a show for everybody, whoever they are. The songs are first rate, and your friends must like girls. We have the prettiest chorus line in London. They'll knock your eye out, Mr. Barton.
I used to be so unhappy, dreaming of the love that never came my way. But not anymore. Now I've found a real friend. My best friend's a teapot, he's round and warm and true. My best friend's a teapot, he helps me when I'm blue. With two for me and one for the pot, I'm happy here and would rather not leave him on the top shelf to step outside with you. I used to know a boy from Bow. He was handsome, fast and gay. He had a shiny motor car and took me out one day. We stopped for tea and who should pay but silly, silly me. But I don't mind, I have a friend who's made of pottery.
My best friend's a teapot, he's round and warm and true. My best friend's a teapot, he helps me when I'm blue. With two for me and one for the pot, I'm happy here and would rather not leave him on the top shelf to step outside with you.
Leave him on the top shelf to step outside with you.
Another cup of tea, Father?
No,
We've had enough to drink all day. That Lord Lydon certainly knows how to entertain his guests.
I shall have to go in a minute, otherwise I'll be late for work. I'm due on at 6.
Mind you, I think I'll go out for a pint. I need to speak to people, tell them about what's happened to me today. It was a real experience.
No, I can't wait to tell them at the Marlborough. Why don't you come in for once in a while?
Marlborough's too posh for the likes of me. I'll stick to my local. Oh. Not that those miserable cockneys will understand a word of it. Your Honourable Mr. Claridge may be one thing, but the likes of Lord Lydon is something else entirely.
Good evening, Mr. Barton. The usual, I suppose.
Thanking you.
A half.
Quite an enigma.
We've got the big darts match tonight away.
Here you go.
Thank you very much.
You'll never guess where I've been today.
Where?
I've been backstage.
Backstage?
At the theatre.
The theatre.
At the theatre. The Royal D, St Martin's Lane.
Oh, did you? Was it a good show then?
I haven't seen a show. I was backstage.
What?
Not many people get to go backstage.
What?
Backstage. Not many people get to go backstage.
I suppose so.
It is my habit to go backstage.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
All right.
What do you mean, all right?
What I say, all right. That's a good English answer, isn't it?
I just said I have been backstage and you didn't want to listen.
I've got better things to do than listen. I've got 2 barrels to get up.
And I've got home to go to. Good night.
Stupid old codger.
Enjoying it?
What?
This. The spin.
Oh, yes. Very much.
Blow the cobwebs of town away.
What?
There's nothing better than a breezy old spin to waken you up.
Yes. So, where is this spin going to?
You will have summer so much you thought your little heart was going to break in two. But I didn't think so. You ever try with all your heart and soul to get your lover back to you?
Well, what do you think?
I've heard about Kew Gardens, but I've never been to it.
Well, this building is called the Temperate House.
Right.
All sorts of flowers and plants. It's cool, unlike the Tropical House. Let's go in.
What lovely, lovely blooms!
Yes, I thought you'd like it.
Oh, it's gorgeous! It's the loveliest thing I've seen in my life. It's like the Crystal Palace.
Yes, it is rather breathtaking. It's very quiet, too. It's not done in here to speak in too loud a voice.
Sorry, I didn't know.
Oh, it's all right to show enthusiasm, but quiet comments. To speak in murmurs is de rigueur here.
All right. I could look at these blooms all day.
When are you and I going to get married, Ivy?
What? What do you mean?
Not so loud.
Sorry.
What I'm saying is when are you and I going to get married? Plain enough, really.
You couldn't marry me.
I don't see why not.
But you're a different class from me. You're an honourable. I'm only an ordinary person.
Forget the honourable. I don't often use it anyway.
But if I married you, it would mean I'd be a lady. Or try to be.
What does that matter? The only thing that matters is whether you love me enough to marry me, isn't it?
Me? Lady? It's impossible.
It's not so absurd as all that. Peers of the realm marry chorus girls, don't they?
I'm not even a chorus girl. I'm a barmaid. I'd never suit you. I couldn't rise to it. I couldn't
give dinner parties with guests. I'll have to learn about everything. Clothes, fashion, speaking proper. All the things about society. No. No, it's nice of you to ask me. Really, it is. But no. No, I couldn't do it. Could I?
Yes. You could. You could learn all those things. They're only habits. You could learn them in 3 months.
Could I?
Of course you could. With me to help you.
I really don't know what to say. You've taken me by surprise. I don't know what to say, but thank you.
That will do for now, darling.
I thought you were a little bit smitten with me. I said to my dad as much, but I didn't think you were this smitten.
I'll come round to your house to see your father, of course. Discuss the details of the engagement.
The engagement? What? When?
I'll do the proper thing. I'll call tomorrow evening when you're working in the Marlborough and talk it over with him, man to man.
I'd like to talk to him first. Prepare him.
Don't. Let us men do the talking. That's the ticket.
Well, if you think it proper. But I'm sure you're making a mistake. I'm simply not good enough for you.
Well, we'll see about that. The reverse is true, actually.
You mean affairs, Gerald? You have had affairs?
Good gracious me. A gentleman has affairs early. I'm past all that. I'm asking your father for your hand in marriage. That is all.
I can't believe this. It isn't real.
No? It's as real as that flower there. And as beautiful. Believe me, we'll talk, your father and I. And you'll be the happiest bride in London.
Will I?
Yes, my love. There.
Gerald, do you love me? Truly?
Oh, yes, I do. Excellent wine, this elderberry, sir. Your health.
And yours, sir.
I'm sorry to interrupt your day, Mr. Barton.
Nothing to interrupt, Mr. Claridge. Didn't fill my days with anything useful, like I used to do in his lordship's estate. I'm not a town person. I hate the town.
So I should suppose. But not everybody in it, I trust. Even me.
I like you, sir. I've a feeling my Ivy likes you very much. She said as such to me today, regarding your visit.
Well, sir, I imagine you must have a pretty shrewd idea of where the land lies in that direction, haven't you? I'm sure you know what I mean. I mean, you must know that I'm hoping before very long, how shall I put it, well, to be in a position where I'll be responsible for your daughter in all matters.
Well, I hope I keep my eyes open as well as anybody else, but as a matter of fact, I didn't know it had quite gone as far as that.
Well, I have hopes that you approve of my suit regarding your daughter.
I am honoured, and may I say surprised, sir, that you had your eye on Ivy. She's not a lady, that's true, but if you don't want a lady, Ivy has her faults, but you can rely on her in all things, which I can't say about all the ladies of society I've seen, and I've seen some things in my time, I'm telling you, sir. House parties and
I'm sure.
Goings on like you never heard of. Ivy's not like that, sir.
I'm sure she's not.
You couldn't, no matter where you look, get a better girl than Ivy for a wife, for an ordinary man.
That's exactly why I am so attracted to her. She's trustworthy.
Having been bitten once before, sir, by a so-called lady?
I must admit I have.
Don't want no lady to be your wife, do you?
I find ladies unreliable. It's a painful subject for me.
Well, say the word regarding the provisions for the engagement, you'll find me approving, deeply approving.
Thank you, Mr. Barton. I appreciate that more than I can say, sir. I'm in a position to hint at my financial situation, Mr. Barton, which is, I'm glad to say, rosy.
Well, glad to hear it, sir.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm in partnership with Lord Lydon in a new show he's putting on at the Empress Theatre, and I'm investing a good deal of money in it. It's an excellent prospect, and I hope to be very much better off when it is produced and is a success.
Is it sure to be success?
Well, I can't go as far as to guarantee success, but I can tell you some very responsible people are involved. Lord Lydon, obviously, is the prime investor.
His lordship seems a proper gentleman.
That's exactly what he is. That's why I'm going into partnership with him. And he has a third investor you will know about. He's always in the papers. Archibald Kane, the industrialist.
I've heard of him. Who hasn't? As you say, he's always in the papers.
And Mr. Kane often invests in Lord Lydon's shows. You could meet him if you're interested.
If I'm interested?
If you're interested in investing. Of course, I wouldn't want to waste Sir Archibald's and Lord Lydon's time.
Investing? I never thought of that.
Well, it could make you a great deal of money. But don't think I'm advising it. A favoured few, myself included, get a fair amount of profit. But if you don't want to touch it, don't, is my advice.
What sort of profits would there be?
Well, the sky's the limit. Thousands if it runs for 6 months. Tens of thousands if it runs a year.
You're in for what, do you mind me asking, sir?
Well, I'm probably in for 1,000. I don't mind telling you that because, well, you're in a way family.
I couldn't afford 1,000.
What could you afford?
A couple of 100. I suppose they'd laugh at that.
Good Lord, no. Nobody laughs at honest money. Look, I tell you what. Come to the theatre bar downstairs tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. Then you can meet Archie Kane and Lord Lydon and discuss the details. If you don't like it, don't do it. What could be fairer than that? If the others think your investment too small, I shall speak up for you.
Thank you very much, sir. I'll be there. Will you be there? I'd have you at my side.
Well, I'll include your investment with mine if you'll feel safer. As I say, it's all in the family.
All in the family? That's a very nice way of putting it, sir.
Well, hello. Good evening, Mr. Claridge.
Gerald, please, Archie. Drink?
Well, I'll have a brandy.
Have another.
Well, I will, if you press me.
Barman, large brandy for Mr. Kane.
At once, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Claridge. Sorry if I'm early.
Oh, there you are. Archie, allow me to present Mr. Barton, a fellow investor. Well, prospective investor in Tommy Lydon's new show.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Barton.
Likewise, sir.
Mr. Barton's from the country.
Oh, beware of these town sharks, Mr. Barton.
I'd say, begging your pardon, sir, you're somewhat of a whale yourself, sir. And you're investing, I believe.
A whale, Mr. Barton. I've been called some names in my time, but never a whale. Yes, I'm investing. I always do. If Tommy Lydon's producing. He hasn't had many losers.
That's good enough for me, sir.
Now, don't do anything on my say-so.
Oh, I won't, sir. But you have, from what I read in the papers, never lost money yet. I'd call you not a whale, but a fox, sir.
A whale, then a fox? I see your friend's got a sly country sense of humour, Clarice.
Yes, indeed.
Mr. Barton, as Gorse had intended he should be, was deeply impressed by Mr. Kane. Indeed, the mixture of Lord Lydon and this Mr. Kane almost at once slightly unbalanced him. He had a sudden vision of entering, or half-entering, by a piece of ridiculously good luck, a circle of very great wealth and opportunity. Such pieces of good luck did, after all, sometimes befall men. And Mr. Kane's genial northern simplicity and complete lack of snobbery, as described by Gorse, in addition to removing any fear he might have had in the thought of meeting him, brought both the rather ethereal Lord Lydon and the rather mysterious Mr. Gorse somehow nearer to earth.
Sir, good evening. Madame.
Good evening.
Have you seen anything on the menu?
What's the special tonight, Mario?
A fresh langoustine to start, then the spaghetti, the way you like it, no? And for Madame?
She'll have the same.
And a bottle of your usual, sir?
Please, Mario.
Is this Italian food?
Well, I should hope so. It's an Italian restaurant.
I don't know how to eat spaghetti.
Well, I'll show you.
Can I ask for a knife and fork?
No, you can't. You'll have to learn many things now you're with me. Don't worry, I'll help you. Don't worry.
I'm worried about everything, Gerald. How to do things, how to eat Italian food, how to talk to waiters.
You don't talk to waiters. Let the gentleman do it. In this case, me.
You're so good to me, Gerald, to teach me these things. I was ever so surprised when you called to take me out.
Another outing for the £4 dress.
I wear it every time I go out with you. The night at the theatre and this time.
Well, there'll be many more times, I promise.
What are your plans, Gerald?
Plans?
You know, when you've done your business with the theatre.
Well, carry on as usual, I suppose.
Do you intend to stay at your old club for a while?
Yes, for the time being.
I wish I could visit you there, just for tea.
It's a gentleman's club. Ladies not allowed, sorry.
I always seem to meet you in public. I want to meet you where there aren't people, where we can be private.
Private?
Yes. That would mean a lot to me.
You shall have your wish. One day.
Your wine, sir.
Thank you. Yes, excellent.
For madame.
I'll never get used to being waited on.
Oh, yes, you will.
It's easy.
Your langoustine, sir.
How do I eat these?
With your fork and fingers. So.
Fingers? It's rude to use fingers.
Not here.
Oh, I'm never going to get used to this.
Where have I parked the car?
Over the road.
Come here, Ivy.
Why?
Come here.
Oh, all right. A doorway.
Well, you asked for somewhere quiet.
I didn't mean in the street.
Well, it's quiet.
No, I don't want to kiss you in the street.
Why? You said you'd come to my club.
I didn't mean this. It's common doing this. Anybody might see us.
Come on, let me put my arm around you. Let me play with your scarf. Oh, it's nice. It's like your neck. Come in a corner. Nobody will see us.
Oh, you're hurting me. Don't!
No, it's only play. It's not for real.
Stop it!
No. Please, Ivy. It's only play.
I don't like it. Why spoil things, Gerald?
I'm sorry. Sorry. I made a mistake. I'm sorry.
There's a policeman across the road.
Is there?
Yes, there is. I think we should get in your car and you should drive me home.
Yes. Yes, I'll do that. Jolly nice evening, I thought.
Good evening, Constable.
Good evening, sir.
Oh, you. You are a card, aren't you?
Well, I have been called worse things, Ivy.
Hello, Gerald, old chap. I am very busy with a get-in, you know, open next Monday.
If I could just have a moment of your time, Tommy.
Well,
it's about money.
Always happy to talk about that.
A very small sum, indeed. Pathetic, I would call it, if it wasn't unkind.
How can I help?
First of all, can you agree to a certain partnership with me regarding my small investors?
What sort of partnership?
Well, I can bundle my small investors into one big bundle and get a better rate from you. But it's really just to accommodate people like Mr. Barton, who is investing £200 in your show through me.
Mr. Tommy, sir!
I'd love to help, but what would it entail? Coming, Mr. Carr!
It would involve you and I having a small joint account.
What?
It will only cost you £25 and me the same. And you'll get, say, £1,000 or £2 from the sum of my small investors. Otherwise, you'll get nothing.
Oh. Interesting. Well, every little helps, I suppose.
Well, I'll require a cheque from you for £25. I'll put in another £25 just to set up the company. Just sign there. It's all legal. You can read it if you like.
Well, I don't know. I really...
Over here, Mr. Barton.
Oh, Mr. Clarence. Sorry to interrupt.
Mr. Barton is one of my small investors.
Glad to be, my lord. Anything you're connected with is good enough for me.
Well, where do I sign?
Here. Mm-hmm. And here. Mm. And the cheque for £25. Sign it, I'll fill it out. Trust me.
Here's the cheque. Though, I don't really know what I'm signing.
Good. We're partners, Tommy. For my list of small investors. 200 from Mr. Barton for a start.
Sir, where do you want this flat?
Good. Good, Mr. Barton. Well, you must excuse me. Coming!
There you are, Mr. Barton. Your £200 is invested in Lord Lydon's new show, You and Me, and may it prosper, as I'm sure it will.
Who do I give the £200 to? I have to draw on my account tomorrow.
Me, actually.
Here you are, Mr. Claridge, sir. Cross-check for £200 for Lord Lydon's new production of You and Me.
Thank you. I shall put your money in Lord Lydon's company, in which I also have a share.
Is that how it's done?
Lord Lydon and I have a... Well, let us call it an arrangement. Let us say a company.
But it will go into the play, won't it?
Yes, it will. And may you earn 10 times more than you put in.
Goodness!
I shouldn't be surprised at your receiving 2,000 guineas for your investment of £200. It's not uncommon.
Lord bless my soul, 2,000 guineas?
Let us drink to the success of you and me.
You and me?
You and me! Oh, I wish I had money in the show.
Daughter, you don't gamble with your savings.
It's not gambling. I would say it's a cast-iron cert.
You are not to do it, and there's an end on it. Oh. Besides, you'll find plenty of reasons to spend your own money soon, won't she, Mr. Claridge?
Oh, yes. Mr. Barton, I will look out for Ivy's interests, you may be sure of that. By the way, I'm taking Ivy down to my aunt's place this Sunday. I'm sure you don't object.
Why on earth should I object? It'll be the proper thing to do to meet a family you're hoping to marry and do not put too fine a point on it. Would your aunt disapprove of Ivy, being an ordinary girl and all that?
Good Lord, no. Aunt Bella will convince the rest of the Claridges, if they need any convincing, that Ivy is a perfectly proper girl to join the family. I'm afraid I mentioned your business connection with Lord Lydon. I'm sure you don't mind.
Don't mind at all, Mr. Claridge, if you think it'll help.
Well, Gerald, please.
Gerald, then.
Of course, Ivy will be staying the night with my aunt, if that's all right with you.
All right, sir, it's more than all right. I'm delighted that Ivy's met such a man as you.
Isn't it pleasant to be riding along in style on a grand morning, not lugging bottles of beer around at the Marlborough?
I've just got the day off because it's Sunday. I'll be back to the Marlborough tomorrow, evening shift.
No, not you. You're never going back to that place.
What am I to live on?
Me. I'm going to be your husband. I will support you in the manner that a middle-class lady should be supported. A little house in town, a cottage in the country, perhaps. In time, a family.
Do you think so?
I'm sure so. Have you read my Aunt Bella's letter?
I've read it 3 times. I know it by heart. It's a lovely letter. She welcomes me to the family, and she says the family will come round to accepting me.
Yet Aunt Bella's not snobby like the rest of the Claridge family. The mere fact that she wrote to you directly proves that.
Are we really a pair, Gerald?
Yes, we are. You trust me. You are going against the will of your father, putting all your savings into Lord Lydon's play. You wait till you see his face when you have £500, not 50.
I've never disobeyed him before. I hope I've done the right thing.
Well, you can always change your mind. You've drawn the £50-odd from the post office. You can always take it back, if you feel like it.
No, you are cleverer than Dad. It stays in the briefcase in this car until we get to a bank. And you can invest the £50 for me in Lord Lydon's play.
That's the ticket. We'll get rich together. Look, what say we stop and have a slap-up lunch before going on to my aunt for supper? Here will do. We'll leave the car in this park and walk to the restaurant.
Why couldn't you just leave it outside the restaurant?
I'd like to stretch my legs. I've been driving for hours.
Oh, yes, of course, sorry.
I'll get the case.
I don't fancy carrying the £50 about town.
I don't fancy the car getting broken into and your £50 stolen. I'll carry it.
Oh, all right.
Oh, that was excellent, wasn't it? And the wine was very good, as I noticed you noticed.
I like proper wine, not elderberry.
Oh, I'm not drunk, I'm just a little bit tiddly. It was a good blowout.
Well, you have your fun, but don't say that to my aunt. A blowout. She wouldn't understand that at all. Ivy, just wait here for a tick.
Why?
Because I have to pay a call of nature.
It's not called a call of nature down Fulham. It's called taking a fee.
I know what it's called down Fulham. Now, show me a sec, and I'd better mind that briefcase.
Well, maybe a little bit tipsy, but I won't lose it standing here.
In your state, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, take it then. Don't forget what's in it. £50. Don't flush it down the lab.
Not so loud.
Have one on me.
Hello? Are you in there? Gerald? Gerald!
I'm not Gerald, and I'm not sure you should be in here, young woman. It's for gentlemen only. The ladies is the other side of the park.
Well, I've lost my friend. I saw him go in this door, and he's been a long time.
What does he look like?
He's tall, grey suit, reddish hair.
Striped tie, public school?
Yes, I suppose so.
I saw him a few moments ago. This place has two exits, you know.
Does it?
Round the back. Come through. The experience of a lifetime. Follow me, my dear.
Where did he say he would be?
He parked the car near the gate.
Well, then we go to the gate. It's near. I'll go first, if it's all right.
Yes.
You want to find this man?
Yes. Yes.
Right. I'll run. Hey! Stop!
Hello?
Lady looking for you.
Oh! I thought you'd gone ahead. Dreadful mix-up. Matter of fact, I'm having some trouble with the engine. It's not firing right. I'll take a look at it. It was pinking a little this morning.
Ah, here she is.
What's happening?
Well, I heard a knocking sound. Thought I'd put it right. It's going.
You really scared me.
No, it's all right now. Thank you, old chap.
You all right, my dear?
All right now, yes.
Well, I'll go about my business. Unfortunate phrase. Goodbye.
I thought you'd left me. What?
No more questions, darling. Poppy and the engine may die again.
Oh, all right. Why did you do that?
Why does anybody do anything, darling? I looked for you. Thought you got lost. And then the engine gave me trouble. Well, oh, never mind. Off we go.
I told you we shouldn't have stopped for tea.
And I had to stop at that garage to get my engine checked. Only half an hour to my aunt's. Oh, by the way, you've got your briefcase.
Of course I have. I've had an awful time, Gerald. I felt such a fool running after that man in the park.
I think you were afraid I'd run away from you. Weren't you, darling? With your £50 in the briefcase.
No, it wasn't. Don't say that. I do love you, Gerald. I feel quite snuggly.
I know what we'll do. I'd like to tell you something about the family. About money and all that.
I'm not interested in money. I'm interested in you.
You and your lipstick, powder and paint. You don't have to be in such a hurry, because before we actually go to my aunt's, I want to take you somewhere just near it. I've got a surprise for you. Would you like a surprise?
Yes, I would.
I want to be at the exact spot where I spent some of my youth. I'm afraid we'll have to take the briefcase. Not so romantic, but there we are. And when I've given you your present, we can look at Auntie's house from the hill.
This way.
Oh, I can't see.
Hold my hand.
Thank you.
Right. Up here a little.
All right. It's quite safe.
Yes. It's not far now.
Oh, good.
Up. By that hole.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait.
All right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's nice to be out.
Yes. Here we are, darling. Pretty and secluded, isn't it?
Yes.
This is where I did all my thinking and dreaming.
While still seeming to look around him with a kind of awe, he was actually manoeuvring skilfully in his overcoat pocket with the sash cord. Then he looked lovingly at Ivy again.
Very well, then. Now for your surprise. Shut your eyes and hold out your hands.
Hands? Or hand?
Gorse took his time. As watching Ivy's eyes closely and making a noise with his shoes on the dry leaves beneath them, he withdrew the long sash cord from his pocket and arranged the slipknot gently around the wrist of Ivy's right arm. This was a curious moment, and a moment of great curiosity for Ivy. She was determined to keep her word and not open her eyes, and to aid herself in doing this, she screwed them up even more tightly. She was keenly conscious of the sound of the dry leaves being spasmodically stirred by Gorse's shoes, and she was aware that something was being put around her wrist. She thought that perhaps he was giving her a bracelet of some sort. It was certainly not an engagement ring, which would go on the left hand anyway. Perhaps the ring would be his second gift, saved up for the last, as it were. She then felt something soft going over her left wrist, and she began to be puzzled. Was he giving her two bracelets? In a manner of speaking, Gorse was doing exactly this, as Ivy the next moment was sharply to discover. Holding her right wrist, at first gently, he suddenly held it firmly, and violently wrenched the slipknot tight. Then, still holding her right arm with his left hand, he wound the sash cord twice round her left wrist. Then he forced her wrists together and began to wind the cord savagely round both.
You'll be all right if you don't make any noise. But if you do... Well, why don't you say something?
What do you want me to say?
My God, what a face. I wish you could see your own silly little face. Go on, sit down. I want to talk to you.
Where am I to sit?
Where you are. Underneath you. It's comfortable enough, isn't it? Now I've got you on the lead, my girl. You see?
What are you going to do with me?
You can get free if you follow my instructions. You can say thanks to your father for his £200 and my thanks to you for your 50. You enjoyed my fake letter from the invented Aunt Bella, did you?
Oh, my God. You mean it, don't you? You meant to rob us from the first. Oh, don't murder me.
I'll not murder you. Why should I do that? That's for maniacs. I frighten girls, but I don't kill them. The last thing I want is a dead body on my hands. There. That's tight enough.
you say something.
What do you want me to say?
Nothing. Listen. You put your watch on your wrist. Now the rope. You pull this loop, and you'll be free. Do that after half an hour. No sooner. Or you'll be sorry. Do you understand?
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Follow that path down to the road. There should be people about.
What shall I tell them?
Tell them nothing. You've just lost your way. Otherwise, I'll come back. Little clinging ivy. You don't want that, do you?
Golden. I'll not tell anybody.
No police. No names.
No, I promise. Thank you, Gerald.
The pleasure has been all mine. Au revoir, darling.
Goodbye. Thank you very much.
It's time to introduce Stan Bullitt. Stan was something of a phenomenon. He was 16 years of age and known in the neighbourhood of Little Bedmonton as a holy terror. He certainly had abundant vitality. His parents were dead, and he kept his grandparents, with whom he lived, in a perpetual state of almost abject intimidation. He knew everything, he did everything, he managed everything. He had, therefore, to be obeyed in the long run, without question. He was undoubtedly a terror. The trouble was that he was also, in his own extraordinary way, rather holy as well. Stan Bullitt's bicycle was unusual. It was painted red. His clothes also were unusual. He wore a blue uniform, with red piping on the coat and trousers, and a cap very much like a postman's. Stan Bullitt was employed by the General Post Office to deliver telegrams. A telegram boy. Ivy had the courage to stop him for more than one reason. He was riding his bicycle very peacefully, and this was in delightful contrast to the cars which she had attempted to halt. He was young, he looked about 16, and therefore not as awe-inspiring to Ivy as the wayfarers she had feared to approach so far. More important still, he was in a uniform of sorts. It had been in Ivy's mind for a long while that she should, in her abominable predicament, seek the aid of a policeman, who would, to her mind, naturally be in uniform. Here was somebody in a uniform. Here was somebody who, simply because he wore a uniform, was in some sort of position of authority.
All I do is dream of you the whole day through. All I do is dream of you the whole day through.
Excuse me. Excuse me.
Yes, miss?
Could you help me? Could you tell me where the nearest station is?
Nearest is Pangbourne, but that's a good way away, miss.
Well, far. I want to get to the nearest station. I must get to the nearest station, you see. I must.
Excuse me, miss, but are you in any trouble?
Yes, I am. I'm afraid I am. Can you help me?
No need to turn on the waterworks. Where do you want to go to?
I don't know. To London. I don't know. I've not even got my railway fare. I've only got my watch. Look.
Your hands are bruised, aren't they? What's happened to you, miss?
Long story.
You are in a state. Look, my grandma lives half a mile down the road. I'll walk you there. She'll make you a nice cup of tea and we'll see all about it, won't we?
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
No more waterworks.
Oh, you're so nice. I don't even know your name.
Stan Bullitt. Just you go along that lane, miss. I've got to deliver a telegram. I'll be right back. Just tell my grandma I told you.
Well,
I'll be 10 minutes.
But Stan...
See you soon, miss.
Yes. What do you want?
Stan said to come here.
Did he now? Are you all right, miss?
I'm really a bit faint.
What's the matter, dear? Come in.
That's the whole story. Oh. Who's going to believe it?
Hello? How are you two getting on?
Ivy's told me her trouble. It's very personal.
Just as well to let it out. We must discuss it. Nothing will come of nothing. That's Shakespeare.
He's always spouting Shakespeare. Take no notice. Ivy's told me the whole story.
Tell me.
Well, she's been deceived by a man who took £50 of hers and £200 of her father's.
Oh, I can't face my dad after all this trouble. I won't. I can just see his face.
He won't be understanding.
Oh, last thing he'd ever be.
The police will have to be told. It's thieving.
Oh, not the police. It'll come out about him tying me up and...
What?
What's to be done, Stan?
We'll never know. He's too young.
You'll stay here tonight. All right, Grandma?
Yes, Stan.
Have you any relatives besides your father?
I've an auntie in Bradford.
Good. We'll get in touch with her. But first of all, you'll write a letter to your father telling him all the facts.
Oh.
Though whether he'll believe it from what you've told me is another matter.
Mr. Barton's immediate reaction to the news was that a kindly fate had sent him a glorious opportunity for gloating over Ivy, for jeering at her and tormenting her for the rest of his days. This was because he did not at first realise that he himself was financially involved. He had made out his cheque to Lord Lydon. Therefore there was no need for him to worry. Lord Lydon was safe enough, that he knew. He discovered in his mind that he had always suspected that young Mr. Claridge, who had, however, not succeeded in doing any harm to himself. Mr. Barton, therefore, instead of going at once to the police, let 24 hours go by without doing anything at all. Then some instinct made him telephone Lord Lydon, who was in the telephone book. He was hoping to be able to deliver some bad news which did not affect himself. He was unable to get Lord Lydon, but was answered politely by Lord Lydon's secretary, a man, who said that he would make inquiries, and who asked Mr. Barton to telephone again 2 or 3 hours later. This Mr. Barton did, and he was told by the secretary that Lord Lydon, who was in the country but whom the secretary had succeeded in getting on the telephone, knew nothing whatever about the matter. He had no cheque for Mr. Barton, and was completely mystified. He had had a joint account with Mr. Gorse, that was all. He was certainly not in any way responsible for anything.
I'm sorry. I rather thought you would get in touch with the police, Mr. Barton. It's a matter between you and Claridge, or whatever he's actually called. You entered into a business deal with him, not me. You've lost £200. I know. I sympathise, Mr. Barton. I do, really. But I've lost money myself.
You so-called gentlemen all stick together, don't you? All in it together. I've lost my life savings and you don't give a fig about it.
I don't see how I can help you. Your daughter was involved with Claridge too. £50, wasn't it? How's she faring, may I ask?
She's all right. She has a new job, working in Bradford. She's all right, but I'm certainly not.
Well, as I say, I don't really see how I can help. Now, if you'll excuse me, I really am very busy.
If I get my hands on that Mr. Claridge again, I will kill him.
I expect you will, Mr. Barton.
Thus, this curiously unhappy little story, itself very much like something which is read and marvelled at in a Sunday tabloid, came to a not unhappy ending. Before going to Bradford, Ivy spent the next day and night with the Bullets, with whom she was amazingly happy. There was plenty of room, for the Bullets, in fact, inhabited 3 cottages cleverly knocked into one, on Stan's advice, and let rooms in the summer. Ivy's bedroom overlooked a stream, and was within pleasant earshot of the watermill from which the cottages obtained their name. The sense of release, relief, and peace which came over Ivy in this room was never again equalled in her life, for she was going to her aunt, whom she loved, and she was not going to return to her father, whom she hated and dreaded unutterably. As for Gorse, he had made arrangements, as he nearly always did before committing a robbery and hiding, to exchange his car for another one, and he was now living on the outskirts of Birmingham, in a small boarding house.
Good morning, Mrs. Smythe.
Morning, Captain Goslin. Enjoyed your breakfast?
Yes, jolly good. You're busy at this time of year?
Very busy all the time, thanks. Oh. It's a struggle, though. I've no husband to help me. Used to have.
And what happened to him?
Road accident, 3 years ago. He left me very well provided for. I'll say that for him.
Did he? Did he?
Will you be staying after this weekend?
Yes, I think so. I'm busy too. Got business interests in town. But I rather like this little place of yours. It has rather a nice, friendly atmosphere. I find the company stimulating.
Do you?
I do indeed. I should say I'm intoxicated with the atmosphere, dear lady.
Are you?
Most definitely. Did you have an evening off from your duties to show me the sights of this charming town?
I'd be delighted to escort you, Captain.
Baby did a bad, bad thing. Baby did a bad, bad thing. Baby did a bad, bad thing. Baby did a bad, bad thing.
In Unknown Assailant, dramatized for radio by Alan Pryor, from the novel by Patrick Hamilton, Ralph Gorse was played by Robert Glenister, Ivy Barton by Alison Pettit, and the narrator and Archibald Kane by Stephen Thorne. Mr. Barton was Sean Baker, Lord Lydon, Roger May, the farm girl and Mrs. Bullitt, Claire Corbett, Stan Bullitt, Tom Bevan, and the landlady, Lucy Fitchett. The Teapot Song was written by Simon Hutton.
You loved someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break in two.
Unknown Assailant, directed by Richard Wortley, was a Peer production for BBC Radio 4.